Good afternoon, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic Bee Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and you can also visit our website at www.theorganicbee.com. If you have any questions for our guests, there are many ways you can contact the show. You can post a question on our wall on Facebook, Skype us, send us a tweet on Twitter to @TheOrganicView, or you can contact me directly at June Stoyer. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at questions@TheOrganicView.com. In this special series called The Neonicotinoid View, my guest co-host Tom Theobald and I will be joined by beekeeper Steve Ellis to discuss an unusual bee mortality event due to corn planting. So I would first like to welcome to the show my co-host, Tom Theobald. Good afternoon, Tom.
Hello, June.
And our guest today, Mr. Steve Ellis.
Good afternoon.
Steve, please begin by telling our audience about yourself as well as your experience as a beekeeper.
June. I've been a commercial beekeeper for the last 32 years, and I operate a commercial bee operation that's migratory between Minnesota and California. I call Old Mill Honey Company. I operate about 2,300 hives of bees in the summer months for honey production, and I take the same bees out to California for pollination services in the spring.
Thank you. Can you please share with our audience exactly where your hives are situated as far as the environment is concerned?
Sure. My hives in the spring and summer are located in Minnesota. When as a commercial beekeeper, I move my bees back and forth on semi-trucks, and we load up 400 to 500 hives onto one semi-truck, and we net them down and take them from California to Minnesota. And for a short period of time, we put them in what are called holding or staging yards, which are all-weather loading and unloading areas, usually gravel pits or something like that, where we can unload the semis if it's raining or snowing or whatever and put them out and then put them all in one spot and then slowly move them out into spread-out locations. And this time of year, that's what I'm doing. They're in a holding yard, and I'm moving them out to spread-out out yards.
Steve, in the bee world, we've started to see reports of bee losses that appear to be associated with corn planting and primarily the dust from corn planting. And it's coming from throughout the Corn Belt and southeastern Canada. And it sounds like, from what I've heard from you, that you may be experiencing the same thing. Can you describe what's taking place with your bees?
Sure, Tom. What appears to be going on from all the people that I've talked to and what I'm seeing firsthand in my own operation is acute mortality events in these beehives at the time of corn planting. We're trying to sort this whole thing out and figure out how these neonicotinoid seed coatings on corn are causing acute mortalities in beehives that are some distance from the field where this chemical is being sown in with the seeds. Christian Krupke in Purdue has listed multiple routes of exposure, and I'm not sure that we have the exact route of exposure here, but we certainly have the mortality occurring at the same time that the seeding is going on. And just exactly how that's causing the mortality, people ask me, well, how can putting seed in the ground kill beehives that are like a quarter mile away or something? And I'm like, well, okay, it does seem kind of weird even to a beekeeper, but there's a lot of possible things that are offered up that this chemical is getting onto flowers like dandelions or willows, and the bees are encountering it on the flowers, or that the bees are flying through this plume of gas being given off as the seeds are planted, or you know, it may be very possible that these bees are just respirating this chemical in, and it's killing them. But something associated with the corn planting is killing these bees. They go seed these fields, and I looked in my yard here, and there were a lot of bees out on the ground and on the bottom boards, twitching and on their backs with their legs going a mile a minute, and there's really nothing else that causes a bee to do that. So it's pretty definite in my mind that the neonicotinoid is somehow getting into these bees and causing mortality events.
The neonicotinoid is used as a seed coating on the corn. Isn't that the concern? The corn seed is abraded as it's being planted, and that generates very toxic dust. Isn't that the vector primarily?
Well, the primary vector apparently is, right, the neonicotinoid seed treatment somehow is getting off the seed and getting to the bees somehow. Absolutely. That's what's going on here. And there's really no other chemicals used at this time of the year in farming or anything. I mean, it's so early in the season that there's no bugs out. I mean, nobody's spraying for anything else. This is the only insecticide that's out there that's a possible cause for acute poisonings like this.
Thank you, Steve. Tom, if we could take a moment, could you please recap for our audience exactly what the sublethal effects of neonicotinoids are?
Boy, they're many and varied, and just recently we've seen a report that was issued by the EPA and the USDA where they essentially put pesticides at the bottom of the list and said that there were many factors associated with the problems we're seeing with the bees. But if you look at the science with an open mind, what the science shows us is that these systemic pesticides have a variety of modes of action from very subtle to very dramatic, and what we're talking about today is one of the more dramatic, more immediate effects. Effectively, these systemic pesticides open the synapses, they open the neural connection, and the bee is essentially just firing to death. Its nervous system has gone crazy. These are neurological toxins. But there are many other ways that they can have an effect on a colony of bees that may not show up for weeks. They can interfere with their homing ability, with their memory, with their navigation ability, with their grooming ability. And grooming is very important in a social community like the bees. That's how the pheromones, the scents, are transferred within the colony. The work of Henk Kennekes in Holland has shown us that the effect on the synapses is cumulative and irreversible. And the conclusion from that is that there is no safe dose. And in fact, if death is the end point, it takes thousands of times less of this product to produce that same effect if it's administered in tiny amounts over time, which appears to be what's happening in the environment. So that's some of the technical background of how these systemic pesticides operate. And far from being the bee losses being a great mystery with multiple factors, if you look at the real evidence, the factors are primarily derived from the effect of the systemic pesticides. They are at the foundation of these losses that we're seeing in the bee industry, and many other life forms as well, aquatic invertebrates and prairie birds and soil organisms, a whole host of things are being damaged.
Thank you. Steve, my next question is for you. Could you please explain to our audience what you've experienced in previous years as far as when corn has been planted and any type of bee losses? Have you experienced anything of this nature in the past?
Yes, I have, June. Ever since they started putting this stuff on corn, I've been observing in the spring unusual mortalities. Three of the last 4 years, I've officially reported these losses to EPA. But even before officially reporting them, I would see out in the yard here and there bees twitching on locations at corn seeding time and say to myself, why am I seeing a pesticide exposure event now when no pesticides are being used? So this was a riddle when they first started putting this stuff on the seed to most beekeepers, because beekeepers have become accustomed to looking for pesticide poisoning in the midsummer and the fall, when insect predatory pests are more prevalent, and when commercial pesticides are applied to control an outbreak of a pest. And we're used to looking for pesticide poisoning in the summer and the late summer, but we are never have been used to looking for pesticide poisoning so early in the spring. This is something that took everybody by surprise because we were not programmed to look for it.
Thank you, Steve. How did the EPA respond when you filed the report?
When I first filed the report 4 years ago, they were kind of like, well, this is a highly unusual thing. We've never heard anybody complain about this before, and it must just be some very unusual circumstances that you encountered, and it must be a very isolated thing, and maybe there's some little particular thing in this one instance that cropped up. We'll need to look into this further. It was largely brushed off, the first reports, yes. They didn't.
Do you know if any other beekeepers experienced the same type of situation or activity, should I say?
Sure. Lots of beekeepers are experiencing this. The part of the problem of why it's not more widely recognized as a problem is that beekeepers have been discouraged by our system, our current system, from reporting pesticide injuries. Beekeepers who have gone to report pesticide injury to their state authorities, who are given primacy authority to look into these and the sole primacy authority to look into pesticide incidents in their states, oftentimes meet the beekeeper's request with a thorough examination of the beekeeper to find what he's doing wrong and then go after him if there's any violation that they can find of anything the beekeeper is doing. And that net effect has caused beekeepers to be very discouraged from reporting, that nothing will happen if they report it. They'll waste a lot of time, and they'll bring a lot of state inspectors down on their own head. So reporting has been discouraged in a very effective way for beekeepers out in the field. And that is a huge problem for why we don't have more beekeepers reporting this problem going on in the United States. In Ontario, they have not discouraged their beekeepers, and they wound up with a huge number of reports came in, and they were looked into by their provincial authorities. Most states do not operate as well as the province of Ontario.
For a minute, I'd like to touch upon the economic consequences of what we're seeing here. I've been a commercial beekeeper for 38 years, a honey producer primarily, so I understand the dynamics of honey production. But if you could just give the viewers an understanding of, in a normal year, what would you be doing now? You'd be setting your colonies up in locations for honey production. Isn't that true? And what do you think that this, you called it an extreme depopulation event, I think. What do you think the economic impact is going to be for an operation of your size?
Wow. Well, Tom, you know, I do describe this as an extreme depopulation event. Fair Crop Life was out, did a thorough report and investigation of my incident last year. And their conclusion was that in their report, which they provided me and which is public, that the bees had an exposure, that the lab results coming back with chemical detections was indicative and confirmatory of an exposure event to this chemical. And then they didn't go as far as saying that what effects that exposure event might have on bees. But from the beekeeper's side of the ledger here, that this exposure event to this chemical translates into a lot of bees dying right off the bat. And somehow this chemical is getting into the hive. And then it raises the question, what is that doing to the long-term viability of the queen in the hive? Because the queens that I have in these hives right now are the ones that I'm relying on for the summer and the fall of this year. And if something has gotten into the hive that can kill this many of the members of the colony, it seems very likely to me that there are sublethal effects occurring to this queen, and that the depopulation that's occurring now very likely to have a cumulative effect down as the season progresses. So I see less honey production. I see less spring building. I can make less splits. My numbers aren't as good as they should be, all of those kind of things. But we need more science as to what that exposure event actually does to the colony over the course of the year. And I think there's some studies on that that indicate that these kind of exposure events, as the industry likes to refer to them, have very negative impacts on the colony down the line.
Thank you, Steve. I have a question for you. Industry likes to point to varroa as the cause for any issues with colonies. Do you have any evidence of varroa in your colonies?
Well, June, this is this is an interesting question because it's a little bit complex. Since varroa did show up on Apis mellifera in the United States, beekeepers have really struggled with it. It is a serious problem, and left untreated, it will kill a hive of bees. It's a very destructive mite. But having said all of that, we've been dealing with this mite for quite a while now in the beekeeping industry. And we know how to control these mites and keep them under normal circumstances under control. But trying to control these mites the last number of years has been increasingly difficult. All beekeepers report that their normal control methods don't seem to be appropriate. Instead of trying to control once or twice a year, they're going to 4 and 5 and 6 or 8 applications of control measures to try to keep these things under control. And why are they so much more difficult to control? That begs the question, why are they so much more difficult to control? And many of us have the strong opinion in this bee industry that the reason these things are getting more difficult to control is that the bees are unable to chip in and provide their part of the control that should be going, like grooming, like Tom referred to. And if they're unable to groom some of these mites off, then the populations develop much, much more rapidly. And so mechanisms like that, if impaired, are very capable of causing this problem to become much, much more unmanageable than it normally would be.
Thank you. But with this unusual event that you've just experienced, could it be said that varroa was to blame for these losses?
Oh, absolutely not, June. That one I can say absolutely not. This is early in the season. Varroa is well under control at this point in my operation, and none of the symptoms of these dead bees resemble anything that is symptomatic with death from varroa.
What about the actual foraging that's available for the bees? Is there adequate food for the bees in the area where your hives are kept?
Where my bees are right now is, as I mentioned, a holding facility where I put a large number of bees in one place for a short period of time until I get them moved out and spread out into locations. And during that short period of time, there is never enough natural forage available for this large number. In this case, I've got 1,312 hives here. And there's almost no location anywhere that has floral source adequate to naturally feed that number of bees. So for the short period of time that I have bees here, they go out and get a little something that's available and kind of split it up, but they rely on me to provide them with 2-3 supplemental feedings of sugar.
When you move them out, Steve, what would a typical bee yard be? How many?
When I move them into locations, I wind up with 24 to 32 hives.
And the surrounding environment would be suitable to give them a range of pollen and nectar sources, and it's a mixed environment, isn't it?
Absolutely. They naturally feed themselves once you get them evened up. It's kind of like if you had cows, and you put like 1,000 cows in a small pasture. Well, they're not going to be able to get enough grass to eat. You got to throw some hay at them.
Of course. Just out of curiosity, What about water? What sources of water are available for your hives in this particular location?
Okay, water is a question, and also another potential contaminant route for this clothianidin. The state came out and took some samples of surface water. What these are using for water sources is surface water. Surface water in low, kind of sloughy areas where there's roots and moss and things that they can land on. Bees don't like to gather water from a big, deep water source because they're really good flyers, but they're just terrible swimmers. And if they get into water and deep water, they drown pretty easily. And so they want to go to the very edge, or they want to go to a wet, spongy kind of source that they can land, stay dry, suck the water up, and fly away. So here I have those kind of sources that are low, spongy areas. And that is where they go to. There's a number of identified spots I showed the investigators to take water samples. And that is a potential mechanism that this chemical could be getting into the water that they are feeding on and bringing back to the hive as well.
There are some recent studies that were done in Saskatchewan on this very issue, and they analyzed wetland water and found that pre-planting, so that whatever they found would have been from previous season or seasons, they found some of these systemic pesticides at significant levels. There's great concern about the water sources.
Well, there's for the environment, of course, having contaminated surface water is a huge issue because of aquatic systems. And I'm not an expert on that, but I do know that my bees go out and gather water, and if it's a tainted source, that's a potential route of contamination for bees, too.
Any homeowner with a bird bath and bees in the area would know full well that during the hot months and even in the cool months, the bees are at their bird bath getting water.
Yep. Bees are actively out gathering water. They're amazing social insects. They've got groups that go out and gather water. They've got groups that go out and gather propolis to kind of glue things together inside the hive. They send some out for nectar and some for pollen, and they're amazing, amazing organism, the colony of honeybees.
Thank you.
Boy, I have 1,000 questions as a beekeeper. I think that we've covered quite a bit of it. We're very concerned with the direction things are going, and we need to give it much closer attention than we have. I talk with beekeepers from around the country and, in fact, around the globe on a regular basis, and these challenges that we're facing are life-threatening for more than just the bees. We're having a hard time maintaining viable operations. And I want to thank Steve for taking the time to bring people's attention to it and explain what it's like from the beekeeper's perspective.
Well, I would like to thank both you and June for bringing this subject forward for people to try and understand, because we have to preserve the bees. We really need a pollinator base in natural systems and in agricultural managed systems, and it is very much imperiled right now. And we've got to get people woken up to the danger that's involved with doing something like that.
Well, thank you, Steve, and thank you, Tom.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. This has been June Stoyer with the Organic Bee Radio Show. Have a great afternoon, everyone.